Medicom Medical Publishers produces peer-reviewed reports and highlights on major medical meetings. We bring the Congress to the physician.
Welcome to this podcast brought to you by Medicom Medical Publishers. My name is Dr. Rachel Giles, and I'm the Medical Science Officer at Medicom. Today, I'm going to be talking about six of the presentations held at the San Antonio Breast Cancer Symposium, which was held in San Antonio, Texas, in the United States, from the 7th through the 10th of December, 2021. Enjoy listening.
Thank you to all the healthcare professionals who have worked so hard to bring us through the current pandemic.
A presentation held by Dr. Patricia Gans from the UCLA School of Medicine in California, the United States, talked about the updates from the Phase 3 Olympia trial. Adjuvant treatment with PARP inhibitor olaparib, it showed beneficial effects for patients with BRCA1 and 2 mutations and high-risk HER2-negative early-stage primary breast cancer. The Olympia trial, it's a randomized, double-blind, placebo-controlled Phase 3 trial evaluating the efficacy and safety of the PARP inhibitor olaparib in patients with germline BRCA1 or 2 breast cancer who have completed definitive local treatment and neoadjuvant or adjuvant chemotherapy. A recently published interim analysis at the medium follow-up of 2.5 years showed that the 3-year invasive disease-free survival to be 85.9% in the olaparib group versus 77.1% in the placebo group, which had a difference of 8.8%, and the hazard ratio for invasive disease or death was 0.58, which is clearly significant. However, chemotherapy has substantial acute toxicity in early-stage breast cancer, which delays recovery. Additional adjuvant therapy could add acute toxicity, and that could lead to a longer delay in recovery. Therefore, in the Olympia trial, patient-reported outcomes, or PROs, were collected to guide discussion between the physician and the patients regarding the risks versus the benefits of additional adjuvant therapy. So Dr. Gans presented those results at the San Antonio meeting. The Olympia trial included 1,836 patients with HER2-negative germline BRCA1 or BRCA2 mutated early-stage breast cancer who had received local treatment and neoadjuvant or adjuvant chemotherapy. Participants were randomized 1:1 to 1 year of adjuvant olaparib or placebo. The patient-reported outcomes, the PRO assessments, were done at baseline and every 6 months up to 2 years. The primary hypothesis stated that patients on olaparib may experience greater fatigue severity at 6 and 12 months compared with patients on placebo, and secondary hypotheses focused on gastrointestinal symptom severity and quality of life. Data from 1,535 patients were available for that analysis being presented in San Antonio. The baseline scores for fatigue were well balanced between the study arms. Patients treated with olaparib experienced a higher increase in fatigue scores at 6 and 12 months compared with patients treated with placebo. However, the difference between the groups did not reach the pre-specified border of a clinically meaningful difference of 3 points. It was 1.3 at 6 months and 1.5 at 12 months. At 18 and 24 months, there were no differences in fatigue scores between the patients treated with olaparib or placebo, and scores for nausea and vomiting were clinically meaningfully higher in patients treated with olaparib at 6 and 12 months, but not at 18 or 24 months. Diarrhea was not increased for either treatment group during the study, and physical functioning, emotional functioning, nor global health status was impaired over time with either treatment group. Dr. Gans said, quote, "In conclusion, these results show that treatment with olaparib comes with clinically meaningful increase in nausea and vomiting during the first year of treatment," said Dr. Gans. "Olaparib does not induce a clinically meaningful increase of fatigue, diarrhea, or quality of life," end quote. Dr. François Clément Bidard from the Institut Curie in France talked about the Phase 3 PADA1 data. Estrogen receptor gene ESR1 mutations, they're known to be drivers of resistance to first-line aromatase inhibitor-based therapy in hormone receptor-positive, HER2-negative metastatic breast cancer patients. ESR1 mutations predict resistance to aromatase inhibitors, but not to fulvestrant. The randomized Phase 3 PADA1 trial aimed to evaluate the clinical benefit of a switch to a fulvestrant palbociclib regimen among the detection of rising ESR1 mutation in blood in hormone receptor positive HER2 negative metastatic breast cancer patients treated by first line aromatase and palbociclib. The PADA-1 trial enrolled 1,017 patients who were being treated in a first-line setting with an aromatase inhibitor plus palbociclib. The patients provided blood samples for ESR1 mutation analyses screening every 2 months. After a median time of 15.6 months, 172 patients demonstrated rising blood levels of ESR1 mutated cells, and none of these patients showed any clinical signs of progression. These patients were randomized to continuation on aromatase inhibitor plus palbociclib, that was the standard arm, or treatment with fulvestrant and palbociclib, which was the experimental arm. Co-primary endpoints of PADA-1 were progression-free survival, PFS, after randomization, and global safety. Like I said, these results were presented by Dr. François-Clément Bidard from France. After a median follow-up of 26 months after randomization, the median progression-free survival in the standard arm was 5.7 months versus 11.9 months in the experimental arm, and that was a hazard ratio of 0.63 and highly significant. So there was an absolute difference in the median PFS of 6.2 months, pretty stunning data. Benefit of fulvestrant plus palbociclib over aromatase inhibitor plus palbociclib was observed in all pre-specified subgroups. Patients who progressed after continuing aromatase inhibitor plus palbociclib treatment were given the option to cross over to fulvestrant plus palbociclib. Among patients in the crossover cohort, and those were 47 patients, the median second progression-free survival was 3.5 months, which is much shorter than the 6.2 months benefit from the early switch to fulvestrant. No new safety signals were observed. Based on these results, Dr. Bidard concluded that, quote, "The first of its kind liquid biopsy-based trial demonstrates that targeting ESR-mutated resistance through a change in the endocrine partner of palbociclib, it's feasible and allows a doubling in the subsequent median PFS. The observed clinical benefit might justify the implementation of the PADA-1 treatment strategy as a valid option in clinical routine." Really interesting data. Dr. Sarah Hurvitz from UCLA at the University of California in the United States presented the updated results, and this was much awaited, the head-to-head comparison of trastuzumab deruxtecan and trastuzumab emtansine as part of the Phase 3 DESTINY-Breast3 trial. So trastuzumab deruxtecan, or TDXD, it's a HER2-targeting antibody drug conjugate for the treatment of previously treated patients with advanced HER2-positive metastatic breast cancer, and it's based on the DESTINY-Breast01 study. The Amelia trial showed that TDM1, or trastuzumab emtansine, is generally beneficial for the population, and this was a head-to-head trial, like I mentioned, examining these two regimens directly next to each other. In the randomized, multicenter, open-label, Phase 3 DESTINY-Breast3 trial, the efficacy and safety of trastuzumab deruxtecan, or TDXD, and TDM1 were evaluated in patients. In the primary analysis, TDXD demonstrated a clinically meaningful and statistically significant improvement in progression-free survival versus TDM1. So in this presentation in San Antonio, Dr. Sarah Hurvitz presented the results from the subgroup analyses of the DESTINY-Breast3 trial, including patients with brain metastases. In DESTINY-Breast03, 524 patients with unresectable or metastatic HER2-positive breast cancer previously treated with trastuzumab and a taxane were randomly assigned 1:1 to receive 5.4 mg per kilogram TDXD or 3.6 mg per kilogram TDM1 every 3 weeks. The primary endpoint was progression-free survival. TDXD demonstrated superior PFS versus TDM1 with a hazard ratio of 0.28, meaning that 72% of the patients benefited significantly from TDXD treatment. Highly significant data. The median PFS was not reached for TDXD, but it was 6.8 months for TDM1. The 12-month PFS rate was 79.7% in the TDXD arm versus 34.2% in the TDM1 arm. The median PFS favored T-DXd over T-DM1 independent of hormone receptor status, prior trastuzumab treatment, and number of prior lines of therapy. And overall, the confirmed objective response rate for T-DXd was 79.7% versus 34.2% for T-DM1. Pretty stunning. For patients with stable brain metastases at baseline, and there were 82 of those, median PFS was 15.0 months for T-DXd versus 3.0 months for T-DM1, and that's a hazard ratio of 0.25. In this subgroup, the objective response rate was 67.4% versus 20.5% favoring T-DXd. In addition, intracranial response rate in these patients was 63.9% for the T-DXd arm versus 33.4% in the T-DM1 arm. Overall, the safety profile of T-DXd was manageable and comparable with its known safety profile. Adjudicated drug-related interstitial lung disease and pneumonitis was reported in 27, or 10.5%, of the patients with T-DXd and in 5 patients treated with T-DM1 overall, with no grade 4 or 5 events. Dr. Hurvitz said, quote, DESTINY-Breast03 met its primary endpoint with T-DXd demonstrating a superior progression-free survival versus T-DM1. Consistent PFS and ORR benefits with T-DXd versus T-DM1 were observed across subgroups in patients with HER2-positive metastatic breast cancer previously treated with trastuzumab and taxane, including in patients with brain metastases, concluded Dr. Hurvitz. Quote, these data support T-DXd becoming the standard of care for second-line treatment in HER2-positive metastatic breast cancer, end quote. And although these data were actually very expected, it's still impressive to see the numbers when they're all lined up like that. Dr. Peter Schmidt from the Barts Cancer Institute in London, the United Kingdom, presented the KEYNOTE 522 primary analysis. Pembrolizumab, it's shown anti-tumor activity and manageable safety in metastatic triple-negative breast cancer. In addition, results from the phase 1b KEYNOTE 173 trial showed that pembrolizumab plus neoadjuvant chemotherapy had promising anti-tumor activity and manageable toxicity in patients with early-stage triple-negative breast cancer. The phase 3 KEYNOTE 522 trial evaluated the efficacy and safety of pembrolizumab plus chemotherapy versus placebo plus chemotherapy as neoadjuvant therapy and pembrolizumab versus placebo as adjuvant therapy in patients with early stage triple negative breast cancer. KEYNOTE 522 enrolled 1,174 patients with previously untreated non-metastatic centrally confirmed triple negative breast cancer. And they were randomized 2-to-1 to pembrolizumab at 200 milligrams every 3 weeks, or placebo, given with 4 cycles of paclitaxel carboplatin, and then 4 cycles of doxorubicin or epirubicin's cyclophosphamide in the neoadjuvant phase. After definitive surgery, patients received pembrolizumab or placebo for 9 cycles, or until recurrence or unacceptable toxicity in the adjuvant phase. Dual primary endpoints were pathological complete response rate and event-free survival. The primary analysis showed a statistically significant and clinically meaningful improvement in event-free survival with pembrolizumab plus chemotherapy followed by pembrolizumab. To assess the robustness and consistency of the primary event-free survival results, pre-specified sensitivity and subgroup analyses for EFS were performed, including 2 that assessed the impact of different censoring rules and 3 that assessed the impact of different event definitions. Treatment effects on EFS were examined in pre-specified patient subgroups defined by nodal involvement, positive or negative, disease stage, meaning stage 2 or 3, menopausal status, HER2 status, and LDH levels. Dr. Peter Schmidt presented these data. After a median follow-up of 39.1 months, the benefit of neoadjuvant pembrolizumab plus chemotherapy followed by adjuvant pembrolizumab versus neoadjuvant chemotherapy alone was generally consistent with the primary EFS results for all 5 sensitivity analyses and in each of the evaluated subgroups. Hazard ratios for the sensitivity analysis ranged from 0.63 to 0.65 versus 0.63 in the primary analysis. The hazard ratio for the subgroup analysis was also in line with the primary analyses, with the hazard ratio of being 0.58 to 0.73. Dr. Schmidt concluded, quote, "These results show a robust treatment benefit of neoadjuvant pembrolizumab plus chemotherapy followed by adjuvant pembrolizumab for previously untreated non-metastatic TNBC, triple-negative breast cancer. The EFS benefit was generally consistent across a broad selection of patient subgroups. These results further support the neoadjuvant pembrolizumab plus chemotherapy followed by adjuvant pembrolizumab as a new standard of care for patients with early triple-negative disease." Dr. Aditya Bardia from the Massachusetts General Hospital in Massachusetts, the United States, talked about the Phase 3 EMERALD trial. So according to the first results of the EMERALD trial, elacestrant, the first oral selective estrogen receptor degrader, showed clinical benefit, and it was a really interesting study. At the moment, endocrine therapy plus CDK4 and 6 inhibitors, it's the mainstay for the management of ER-positive, HER2-negative metastatic breast cancer. However, most patients eventually experience disease progression, including the development of ESR1 mutations. Elacestrant, which is an oral selective estrogen receptor degrader, demonstrated preclinical and clinical activity in a phase 1 trial in ER-positive metastatic breast cancer, including responses in patients with prior fulvestrant, CDK4 and 6 inhibitor, and mutated ESR1 tumors, therefore forming the rationale for this phase 3 EMERALD trial, and these results were highly awaited. EMERALD, it's a multi-center international open-label randomized controlled phase 3 trial that enrolled postmenopausal patients with ER-positive, HER2-negative metastatic breast cancer who'd received 1 to 2 prior lines of endocrine therapy and at least one line of chemotherapy in the metastatic setting, and who had prior progression on endocrine therapy plus a CDK4/6 inhibitor. A total of 477 patients, 228 of which had mutated ESR1 status, were randomized 1-to-1 to elacestrant, 400 mg orally daily, or a standard of care investigator's choice of fulvestrant or an aromatase inhibitor. The study had two primary endpoints, progression-free survival, PFS, in patients with tumors harboring mutated ESR1, and PFS in all patients, so whether or not their ESR1 was detected. Secondary endpoints included overall survival, safety, tolerability, and quality of life. The study met both primary endpoints, and there was a 30% reduction in the risk of progression in the elacestrant arm in all patients, with a hazard ratio of 0.697, and a 45% reduction in the risk of progression in patients with mutated ESR1, with a hazard ratio of 0.546. The PFS rate at 12 months was 22.3% with elacestrant versus 9.4% in the standard of care for all patients, and 26.8% versus 8.2% in the subgroup of patients with mutated ESR1 tumors. For both endpoints, results in key specified subgroups, including the visceral metastases, number of prior lines of therapy, pretreatment with fulvestrant, were consistent with the overall outcome. The pre-specified interim overall survival analysis planned at the time of the final PFS analysis demonstrated a trend in favor of elacestrant in all patients and in patients with mutated ESR1 with a hazard ratio of 0.75 and 0.59, respectively. The final overall survival analysis is expected sometime next year. Common treatment related adverse events with elacestrant included nausea, which affected 35% of the patients, vomiting at 19%, and fatigue, also at 19%, and most of these were grade 1 or 2. Treatment emergent adverse events leading to discontinuation of elacestrant were infrequent at only 6.3%. Dr. Bardia said, quote, "Elacestrant is the first oral selective estrogen receptor degrader to demonstrate a statistically significant and clinically meaningful improvement in PFS in patients with ER-positive, HER2-negative metastatic breast cancer in the second and third line settings, including for patients whose tumors harbor ESR1 mutations. This therapy has the potential to become the new standard of care for patients with this cancer. Future studies will aim to understand the efficacy of elacestrant during earlier lines of treatment in combination with other therapies." A presentation about the Phase 2 Summit trial held by Dr. Komal Jhaveri from the Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center in New York City, the United States, looked at patients with heavily pretreated hormone receptor positive, HER2 negative, HER2 mutated metastatic breast cancer patients. HER2 mutations in the absence of gene amplification or protein overexpression are a unique mechanism of oncogenic addiction to HER2 signaling. Neratinib, it's an oral, irreversible, pan-HER tyrosine kinase inhibitor that has demonstrated encouraging clinical activity either as a single agent or in combination with fulvestrant in HER2-mutated, HER2 non-amplified metastatic breast cancer. Addition of trastuzumab to neratinib-fulvestrant combination regimen showed encouraging clinical activity with the durable responses in the Phase 2 Summit trial in heavily pretreated HR-positive, HER2-mutant metastatic breast cancer patients, including patients who had previously received CDK4/6 inhibitors. Early data also suggest that neratinib, fulvestrant, trastuzumab might be more effective. On the basis of those early findings, and in order to better understand the contribution of neratinib to the activity of the neratinib, fulvestrant, trastuzumab combination, or the triplet therapy, Summit has recently been expanded to include a randomized comparison of neratinib, fulvestrant, trastuzumab triplet versus fulvestrant, trastuzumab the doublet versus fulvestrant, the monotherapy, in 21 patients with HR-positive, HER2-negative, HER2-mutated metastatic breast cancer who had been exposed to CDK4/6 inhibitors. Prior to starting this randomized portion of the trial, 26 patients had already enrolled in a non-randomized cohort receiving neratinib, fulvestrant, trastuzumab. In another Summit cohort, 18 patients with HER2-negative, triple-negative breast cancer were enrolled in a non-randomized cohort and received neratinib, trastuzumab, or the doublet. In the 26 non-randomized triplet-treated patients, the objective response rate was 46.2%, and in the 7 randomized triplet-treated patients, the objective response rate was 28.6%. The clinical benefit rate was 28.6%, and the median PFS was 6.2 months. In the combined randomized and non-randomized triplet cohort, which involved 33 patients, the objective response rate was 42.4%, among whom only 3% had a complete response, but the 39.4% had a partial response. The clinical benefit rate was 51.5%, however, and the median PFS was 7.0 months. No responses were seen in either the doublet or monotreated patients. Diarrhea was the most commonly reported adverse event at 90.9% of any grade, 45.5% grade 3 in the HR-positive, HER2-negative, HER2-mutated cohort, and 89.9% any grade in the triple-negative cohort. Based on these results, Dr. Jhaveri concluded that, quote, the combination of neratinib, fulvestrant, trastuzumab demonstrates encouraging clinical activity in heavily pretreated patients with HR-positive, HER2-negative disease. In addition, the combination of neratinib-trastuzumab shows promising clinical activity in heavily pretreated HER2-mutated triple-negative disease. That's all the time we have for today's podcast. I hope you enjoyed it. San Antonio is always a great meeting. Stay safe and stay healthy.
This podcast was produced by Medicom Medical Publishers.